The guy we're going to talk to today is going to fire us up because this is a guy who has been so successful as a basketball coach. Mm-hmm. So we're talking to a coach today, and I had heard about this program for, you know, quite a few years now, but never had the pleasure of meeting Kevin Sutton. Mm. He is the head basketball coach as well as the athletic director at Mount Verde Academy. And Mount Verde Academy has just really risen during the last few years as both an athletic powerhouse and as an academic powerhouse.
Yeah, they have a fabulous reputation.
Oh, they really do. And it, you know, I think at one time it was sort of this small little school tucked away in Mount Verde, and now it has a reputation that is really just expanding all over. And again, athletically and academically. Mm-hmm. So Kevin Sutton has been there now, I think, 7 years at Mount Verde, but he's a 24-year veteran of coaching basketball.
Oh, wow.
He played himself all the way through James Madison, if you've heard of James Madison, mm-hmm. University mm-hmm. in Virginia. And but listen to the kinds of results that Kevin's been getting. Like during the last 7 years, six of those years, they were nationally ranked.
Wow.
Yeah. 44 players from his program mm-hmm. are playing in colleges on college scholarships right
oh
now.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah.
That's fantastic.
He's got one in the NBA. He's got another one that will be drafted this spring into the NBA. He's got six playing as professionals overseas, you know, because
mm-hmm.
in Europe you have a lot of professional basketball as well.
I have a friend who plays in Iceland.
Oh really? Mm-hmm. Oh wow. And he's had seven Lake County Players of the Year during the last
seven years. You want your kid to be a superstar, you send him over to Kevin.
Kevin obviously is getting some remarkable results, and I had lunch with him last week, and I've also talked to other parents who have had players in his program and other people in the community, and they just have a lot of respect for how Kevin not only coaches, but how he reaches young men.
Mm.
And so I'm really excited for us to introduce today Kevin Sutton.
Kevin.
Hey, Michelle, how are you? Hey, David, how are you?
I'm fine. We're excited to have you on our show today. I think you bring a really interesting perspective, of course, in about basketball, but also about how to reach young men and young athletes on a personal level, not just athletically.
Well, first and foremost, I want to thank you both for having me on the show today. I'm very honored and had to have this privilege. And Michelle, believe it or not, I have a player who just graduated from Mount Verde, who's from Iceland.
Nuh-uh.
Yes, his name is Hakur Pálsson. And people don't realize that in Icelandic language, you take your father's name. So he being a boy, that's how he became Paul's son. And that's his last name, and he's going to go to the University of Maryland.
Oh, wow, that's fantastic.
It is. It really is. Hawk's a great young man. But thank you guys for having me on the show today. I'm really honored to be here, and I had a great lunch with David and felt his energy and felt his passion. So when I got this invitation, I jumped at it.
That's, like that.
That's great. That's good. You have a number of players, of course, that come from other countries, mm-hmm. and many people maybe don't know that, but it's a pretty high percentage, isn't it?
Yes, we have Mount Verde Academy is an international private boarding school located here in Lake County. And we have 40 different countries represented at our school. And I like to tell people all the time when they see our basketball team play, you're seeing a microcosm of our school, and we truly do represent our school. And it's a great thing, you know, especially at lunchtime. It's like look like you're walking into the middle of the United Nations.
Yeah, and I've been over there in your cafeteria, and I know exactly what you're talking about. It does feel like a trip to the United Nations. What kind of a challenge does that present for you as a coach?
You know what, David, early on, and Michelle, early on, it was a number of challenges, you know, obviously language being number one, but then also cultural challenges as well. I've had a young man by the name of Nick Diata, who is from Senegal, and he is currently in college and in University of Southern Indiana. And he's a great young man, and one thing that we ran into a language barrier early on because one of the things that in the African culture, they can't look you in your eye. And so early on, because that's a sign of respect. And
Let me clarify. It's a sign of respect to not look you in the eye.
Correct. Not to look you in the eye because I'm older than he is, so you can't look an adult in their eye or an elder in their eye. And, of course, here in the United States, we want to make sure everybody's making eye contact. So, obviously, There was a little language barrier there between Nick and I, where this young man was showing me the highest form of respect, and I'm thinking that he's showing me the lowest form of disrespect. So we had a meeting of the minds, and we came to an agreement and an understanding that when I addressed him, you know, he would initially make quick eye contact for about a 1 second, and then he would have the opportunity to look away. And but those were growing experiences, and I think I've made myself into a better coach. Well, they've made me into a better coach because I've learned how to understand different cultures and see how we can make it work and make us successful as a team.
That's gonna be hard.
You know, that's just a remarkable example of what happens between human beings, isn't it? I mean, in this case, a very dramatic cultural difference about eye contact. And so he thought he's showing you respect, and at that very moment you're thinking, come on, young man, well, how come you can't even look me in the eye here? You know, what's the problem? And how are we ever going to, you know, build a relationship if you won't look me in the eye? How did that problem get, how did you discover the problem in the first place? Because there's a lot of young men who won't look someone in the eye, and it's only because they haven't been taught.
Yeah, you know what? One thing that I try to teach as a coach, and I look at being a coach as an educator, I try to, you know, teach life skills. One of my mantras is to impact life through the game of basketball. So trying to teach life skills, you know, whenever a coach or a visitor comes to our practices or our workouts or games, all of my players, after it's over, they will always go over and shake hands and introduce themselves, first name, last name, and the country that they're from. You know, because again, I'm trying to teach life skills. In this particular case with Nick, Nick came into me after practice, and you know, and after practice and before practice, we, you know, my office door is open, and so we have a lot of, you know, players coming in and out. They check their mail. So he came in after practice and he said, "Hey, coach, in my culture, I'm not allowed to look you in your eye." Uh-huh. And I said, "Wow, I feel very, very bad at this point, Nick." And I said, "I respect you for that, and I appreciate the fact that you came into my office and for us to talk about this and dialogue about this, because from here on out, this is what we're going to do. We'll do the 1 second, you know, make eye contact with me, and then you'll be permitted to look away." And from that point on, he was here with me for 3 years. And the young man, we never had any more problems. And I know it wasn't even a problem; it was a learning experience. We never had any more of those learning experiences that way.
The first thing I think of when I hear that story is, you must have created a safe environment for him to step up and come into your office and point this out. Because if it's not a safe place to come and, you know, talk to the coach, you're just going to hide. You're not going to go in there and admit this situation. I think there's a lot of young men who do not talk to coaches because they are afraid to talk to their coach. It does not feel safe. Do you think I'm right about that?
I think you're right on the mark. I think it's very important that as coaches, we do create that safe environment where a player is permitted to have the opportunity to, you know, come in and dialogue about, you know, things that they don't quite understand. You know, because what's interesting is in sports, you know, in the heat of the battle, in the heat of the moment, emotions have a tendency to, you know, supersede anything else.
Right.
You know, and you don't have a chance to, you know, go into long detail as to why you need a player to do a certain thing. So, you know, having the opportunity to create an environment where it's safe for a player to come in and sit down with you and to dialogue back and forth is, I think, is very important. I think it's a necessity. I think the successful teams, successful programs that are successful year in, year out, you can look at the coaches and you can tell that they have developed a relationship, and that relationship was built on trust, which starts from being safe.
This idea of, you said in the heat of battle, we don't have time to have conversations. So in that moment, you're really saying, I have to make a decision. I have to make the call. You're going to do what I say in the heat of battle. Am I right? Isn't this kind of this is almost the militaristic approach in sports that probably has to be there when we're in the middle of a game. We cannot have a conference call. We can't sit down and have a meeting about things. We can't have a focus group. Here's the play we're going to run. Go do it.
Right, and especially in sports that such as, you know, ice hockey, lacrosse, basketball, soccer, mm-hmm. where that the action is constant.
Yeah.
You know, in other sports, you know, where football or baseball, where there's time in between, you know, innings or mm-hmm. time in between plays where you can huddle and dialogue, and you see in football where they have, you know, coaches up in the booth and the headsets on and then information is transferred and there's time. But in sports where there aren't as much time, you know, and things can change very quickly. You go from offense, you know, then you turn the ball over, now you're on defense,
yeah,
and
instantly.
If you steal it back, you know, there's a lot of, you know, information that's transferred instantaneously, you know. So I don't think at that point we can have a debate over what we're going to run here, offensively or defensively, or assignments missed or, you know, assignments executed properly.
So the question is, can a coach put on his dictator hat in those situations and have the players accept that, and at the same time, between games, between practices, stop being the dictator and say, you know, come on in, let's talk. Can he create that kind of dichotomy, those two different atmospheres?
Yes, he definitely can. I truly believe that a coach, through communication and through, you know, the development of taking with time, developing the relationship and building up that trust. Yes, I truly believe that a coach can have a dictatorship or a dictatorial approach during the game, and then, you know, create that safe environment for a player to come in and take advantage of that opportunity. Because it's also the onus has to fall on the kid as well,
mm-hmm.
To, you know, take that initiative to come into the coach's office, and this is where parents come in. You know, if parents, you know, allow, you know, and continue to support their child to go in and say, hey, you know, I know you're coming home and you're asking me for clarification, but I think, you know, I think what's really important is you to go back in there and have a coach, have a conversation with Coach Sutton, so he can tell you exactly, you know, what the expectation level is. And one thing that I do here, I tell him, I said, this is a democracy, but it's run by a dictator in the middle of a game.
Mm-hmm.
That is.
That's a good way to say it. Now, parents should encourage their kids to go to coaches and talk.
Yes.
Because I know there were times when my kids came home and they said, you know, I don't understand this. I don't understand why the coach is doing this, whatever. And my answer was, I think that's a conversation you ought to have with your coach. I think you ought to go get clarification. And then right then, at that split second, I can tell whether they feel safe and comfortable to go have that conversation, or whether they're just going to bail on and say, oh, well, you know, that's hopeless. And I think that comes down to what kind of relationship do they have with their coach.
It does. And isn't that the same thing that transfers later on in life with your boss?
Yes. Yep.
You know, and so those, again, you know, when it goes back to trying to impact lives and trying to teach, you know, teaching skills, we can use the sport that we coach, me in particular using basketball, you know, as an opportunity to create that environment to tell them, you know, and later in your life, when you don't understand something, you're going to have to go into your boss,
mm-hmm.
you know, to get clarification, or you're going to continue to make mistakes and eventually get fired. So these are, you know, learned skills that at a young age, when the stakes aren't as high, I think that they can grow and they can mature through, that will transfer to later on in their life to be invaluable lessons.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, parents play a major role. Some of your parents are in the community. Some of them are long distances away. What are some of the challenges that you've run into with parents? Because as we formed Growing Champions for Life as an organization, it was to help parents be better educated to know how to play their role effectively.
Some of the biggest challenges I've had is the parents to allow their children to, you know, deal with some of the things that they're going to have to deal with. Some of them gone from being the best player at sixth grade and seventh grade and eighth grade and ninth grade. Now all of a sudden they're playing with some very, very talented, other very, very talented players, and they may be not the best player. You know, and sometimes the biggest challenge I've had to face is, you know, allowing the parent to dialogue with the parents to understand that the struggles that their child is going through now, you know, are, you know, a good struggle. You know, mm-hmm. they may be prickly or uncomfortable right now, but they are also, you know, if kept in the proper perspective, it'll help them grow. You know, help them mature. It'll help them to handle some adversity. So the biggest challenge that I've had is just, like I said, with parents that want to have, you know, hands-on totally and want to, you know, deal with their children's adversity, before the child has to deal with it.
Yeah, I think there's a natural inclination on the part of parents to want to save our kids from these uncomfortable moments. Mm-hmm. We want to protect them. We want to save them from suffering. And when, in fact, the thing that we identify as suffering is exactly what they need to go through. I mean, that's part of the journey. They get stronger by doing that.
And that's a very good point. They do get stronger. Again, the safe environment enables for the coach to be the coach. Dialogue, you know, I think what's important, I came from Washington, D.C., and a private school up there. One of the first things that I did in the 2 years at Bishop McNamara High School was I had an all-parents meeting, mm-hmm. and then I had an all-player meeting, and then I had a parent and player meeting. You know, and because the main thing I wanted to get across was that, you know, this is the standard of, you know, expectations here, and this is how we're going to handle, you know, if you want to have a meeting with Coach Sutton or the coaching staff or playing time and different types of things. But I think through communication, we were able to answer a lot of questions and certainly nip a lot of problems in the bud.
Yeah. Now, you have shared with me that you really have a fairly well-defined communication philosophy. Mm-hmm. And I'd like you to share that, especially the, you know, we talked the other day about kind of these 3 points, these 3 aspects of communication that you've really taught to all your players. And I'd like you to just run through that quickly, because I think it's paramount that we teach this sort of communication philosophy.
Well, we define communication within our basketball team as information with 3 parts: information given, information received, and information understood. And it became apparent to me in 2006, which was my third year here at Montverde, with the diversity of language and the diversity of skill level, that, you know, we were just talking. And, you know, and there's a huge difference between talking and communicating, you know, and it primarily stems from communication means there's give and take, and there's an understanding of what people are saying to one another. You know, so an example of that, one day in practice, we were doing a defensive drill, and I had L.D. Williams, who just graduated from Wake Forest, and he spoke English, and I had a young man from Puerto Rico who spoke Spanish. I had a young man who was from Poland, who was graduating from Jacksonville this year, named Simon. I had a young man from Nigeria who spoke his native language, and then I had a young man who was from Cameroon who spoke French. And so we had all 5 of these players on the court at the same time, and we were trying to do a defensive drill, and the offense was clearly beating the defense, but the defense was clearly more talented than the offense. But the reason why the offense was more successful and the defense was less successful is because the defense was just talking, you know, and the part of the drill was you had to call out what you had. If you had the ball, you must call out ball. If you had 1 pass away, you had to yell deny. If you were 2 passes away, you had to yell help. So you were in one of those 3 positions. And we were just talking, okay, and the offense was beating us every time. So I stopped practice and I said, listen, guys, there's a huge difference between talking and communicating, okay, and we're talking right now and we're not being nearly as successful as we possibly can because we're just talking. And here's why. I want all 5 of you in your native language to say the word ball. There was only 1 person I could understand. That was LD. Now, I knew what they were saying because I told them what to say, but I could only truly understand LD because he spoke English. And I said, therein lies our problem. We are talking, and you guys are all saying ball because I told you to say ball, but LD doesn't know what you're saying, and you don't really know what LD is saying because you're still mastering the English language. And I'm sorry to be long with the story, but it does bring us to the point. From that point on in 2006, we defined communication, and we needed to communicate. And we defined it as information given, okay? So whatever is called out, ball, 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 okay? The other people had to, what we call echo, they had to echo back what they just heard, okay? So that means that not only did the information was given, it was received, and most importantly, it was understood.
But now, we can take from that and also apply that to a team of players where everyone speaks English and the same problem can exist.
No,
if someone's listening to this right now and thinking, well, that's not a problem, my son's team, because, you know, they all speak English, I would disagree. I think people speaking the same language can sometimes be talking and not no understanding. Question. And it's very clear what happens. And coaches make this mistake. They're using words, terminology, phrases that are that they totally understand because the meaning is within them. The meaning is not inside the word. The meaning is inside the person. And you send that word over to a group of players who are far younger than you as a coach, and you think that they got the message. Probably not.
Another thing, David, that we do within our practices to continue to continue to grow our communication is that in every one of our drills, we try to give out a positive affirmation. You know, for example, and I think this is important. I think this can be carried over in everything, again, not only just in sports, but over in life. And if you continue to give positive affirmation when they are merited, okay, or they've been earned. You don't want to give a shallow positive affirmation. The person knows that they didn't deserve to be called.
Correct.
They did well when they didn't. But, you know, in our shooting drills, you know, a lot of people, you know, will have a shooter and a rebound and a passer. But the passer's job is to not only just pass the player the ball where he wants to receive it perfectly, okay, but he also wants to say words of affirmation. Good job. Mm. Get your feet down. Set your hips down. So those words of affirmation become, you know, hopefully, you know, positive things. And we also feel that when doing that, and if I can continue to give off positive, you know, affirmation, okay, then I'm showing you that I'm secure, you know. And I think it's a big point that when you're in a competition, you know, people, you know, they usually want to win something because a person didn't do something. I think you should want to win because on that particular day or whatever, you were the best. Okay, and you want to beat the person at their best, and when you do, you feel much even better about yourself. So if I'm going to be in a contest, I want to make sure that I do my very best, but also I want the opponent to do the very best too, because I want to know at the end that I was the best at that position.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the fact that I'm secure versus insecure, you know. And too oftentimes it happens in life, people don't want to share their knowledge or whatever it is, because I feel that at that point they're insecure. Me, I try to be as secure as I possibly can, and if a coach comes in and says, hey, I'd like this information, and could you send me some more information, I will readily, even though I play him and compete against him.
Mm-hmm.
It's because I am secure in my position and my knowledge as a coach.
The true spirit of competition, and by the way, I don't know if you've found this book. I just found it recently, and I mentioned it on this show before. The name of the book is True Competition. And it talks about the fact that in many places in America today, we've lost touch with what real competition is. It's when you play a worthy opponent. In fact, you want to play a tough opponent because through that dance, we all get better.
Mm-hmm.
And our goal is not to humiliate or embarrass or destroy another opponent. It's actually to learn and improve ourselves by playing a good opponent. And that's a different attitude than some teams have today about competition. There's a lot of seek and destroy out there, and even humiliate, which is never the goal of true competition, to humiliate your opponent. And that doesn't mean you can't, you know, beat them. Of course, you're trying to beat them. And
to embarrass everybody.
The goal is to honor your game as well as honor your opponent, and that's where the spirit of true competition comes from. I'd like you to talk for and we only have about 4 minutes left, but I know that
okay.
You mentioned to me that your wife has been very instrumental in helping you gain a perspective on your own coaching style, because she walks into practice and says, you know, she observes. Am I right?
Yes.
Share a little bit about that.
Well, first and foremost, my wife, Beth, is very, very intelligent. She works at Rhymes Early Literacy School in Leesburg. And she's a phenomenal teacher. She won Lake County Teacher of the Year. And so what she does is my players love, first of all, they love when she comes to practice because they know the head coach truly just walked in, the associate head coach has been running practice, you know. And so
that's right.
Yeah, and they know practice is almost over.
And that's a good thing.
But
yeah.
What she does is she comes in usually early in the year, and she observes practice. And she's really helped me in this area a tremendous amount. And we do a lot of hand-eye coordination and some different unique drills because we're trying to improve, you know, in all areas. And one thing that we do is we use tennis balls and with our hand-eye coordination, it's a lot of different things. Where she comes in and she'll watch and observe, and in her observation, You know, she looks and watches the kids to determine, you know, and she's usually about, you know, she's shooting a high percentage in her choice of, you know, the kids and their learning styles, because we all know that there's, you know, kids learn differently. You know, and when I first got into coaches, it was like, no, they don't. They just either they listen or they're not listening, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Either they get it or they don't get it. But she's helped me a tremendous amount to know that kids, you know, there's some auditory learners and there's read-write learners and then there's kinesthetic learners and there's visual learners,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then there's a combination of some of those. I mean, the majority of the people, a combination of two or more.
That's right.
And so she helps me an awful lot. And what we've done from that is, and she's been, like I said, shooting a high percentage. Is what we do is we'll take down her information and we'll group the kids based on their learning style. The kinesthetic learners, the visual learners, the read-write learners, the auditory learners. And then when we're going over our scouting reports, we will teach to the learning style, meaning that if you're a kinesthetic learner, you will go out on the court with one of the coaches and physically walk through the opponent's plays.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a auditory, you know, learner, then you stand on the side and you listen and stuff like that. Okay, and if you're a visual learner, then we'll take you in the locker room and, you know, we'll give you the play on a piece of paper, but then we'll also diagram it on the board because people can, you know, look and see it. And then if you're a read-write learner, then we'll give you a blank diagram. And then as we're walking and going over the play up on the board, the student athlete will write down the information because mm-hmm. we're teaching to the learning style, and if we put you together based on your learning style, because we want to make sure that you get it.
Well, here's the whole point of that thing, and that is coaches need to know their players. And if
yes.
you don't know your players, you don't know their learning style, and that's why you're having trouble. And once coaches decide they're going to know their players, and then they can really help them. And obviously, you're really a step above in that, and I applaud you for that.
Thank you.
Kevin, we have just run out of time, and I'm so thankful for the time you have given us. This has been so informative, and I thank you and wish you the best of luck as you move forward now in developing your whole program.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you again for having me. This has been an enjoyable experience, and David, your books are phenomenal. And listeners out there, if you haven't read them, please do. There's a wealth of knowledge out there. And Michelle, don't forget, you know, Paul's son.
Iceland, okay? Iceland, right.
Iceland. I won't forget.
And I tell Hawk all the time, I was like, man, I'm glad you're a guy, not a girl. Yeah. You know, would you be Paul's daughter?
Yeah, that would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Thanks, Kevin. I'll be back in touch with you. Thanks.
Okay, take care.
Thanks so much for joining us.